Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to issue 52 of Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer. As always, with me is my fearless companion in crime, co-host, and curmudgeon extraordinaire, Cole Houston. Cole, say hello.
As always.
As always. As his ever was. So we have joined you with the second issue tonight of the...
Continuity is not absolute.
Thank you for having that prepared, because I knew that I wouldn't.
Well, you did so well last time. I didn't want you to have to feel obliged.
Right. I've got, like, I pulled a hammy. I got, like, podcaster's elbow or something. I can't. I gotta stay off of it for a while.
And in the words of TV's Frank, tonight's episode is, I didn't know we had one of these.
I didn't know we had one of these.
Fish.
But so it's all
don't
about...
Have a Vigoda. We, in fact, have
I wish
a
we
whole
had.
Bunch of stories about things just came out of nowhere.
I wish we had Abe Vigoda.
I do, too.
I want to retcon the show into a laugh-in-like presence with Abe Vigoda being able just to pop in every once in a while and say something.
It should be like the Late Show or something. Just have Abe Vigoda show up and read lists of things.
Right.
Top 10 worst comic book toys ever. Why am I even doing this?
Well, yeah, that would be awesome. So the whole reason that this show exists tonight is for people who essentially paint themselves into a corner and need to get out, or B, really absolutely love pulling things out of thin air and making cool stuff happen, which is, you know, equal parts. I think it's like a 50-50 mix there. Of that. And I'm sure Cole has other
Absolutely.
Things to add that's outside of my purview on that.
Well, it's one of these things where, as a writer, it's easy to find yourself writing yourself into a hole.
Right.
Or into a corner or something like that. And then the difficult task is, do you try to find some reasonable way to get out of it, or do you just fake it?
Right. Do you take the hard road, or do you take the easy road? There's a path less traveled, and that is the I'm going to go back, pour through the continuity of this book, find some way out, and use it, or
I'll come up with something along the way,
or the Infinity Gauntlet. Which way you want to go? Which, by the way, that's my favorite. That's my favorite.
That one was a tremendous boon to anybody who wanted to shake things up a bit.
Right.
And what we're really getting at with this issue is that, you know, sometimes it generally tends to be by either editorial mandate or just poor preparation on the part of writers. Things just come out of nowhere because somebody wants to go in a certain direction and everything, all the groundwork that's been laid beforehand won't take you in that direction. And you thought Superman could change the course of a mighty river with his bare hands.
Right. Well, you got this idea that you start a ball rolling somewhere. It's a butterfly in Brazil flaps its wings, and eventually your great-great aunt dies. It's the idea that because you did something, because you had Jean Grey say X in this issue, that now, 30 years later, you have painted, over 30 years, you and everybody else who's written this comic before you, and every editor, and every bullpen manager, and everybody else has painted this corner in, and you've got to get out of it. So how do you get out of it? You know, that's what it comes down to. There are some really fun ways to get out of it, and there's some really awful ways to get out of it, but they've... They've definitely, and we were talking before the show, that I think that the paragon of the where do we get one of these would have to be Reed Richards almost.
Reed was the best example of if you need it, he probably already had it.
Right.
And if he didn't, he could invent it in short order.
And by short order, we mean in between panels.
Exactly. I really think that the stretching power was just the face of what he could do.
Yeah.
But his real power was literally being able to pull ordnance out of his ass.
Well, he had his ass infused with PIM particles, so he could store anything he invented literally in his ass. Not that he would need it. Because
on a microscopic level.
On a microscopic. Not to mention, I mean, his ass stretches.
Oh, that's so true.
He wouldn't really
like
need
a chipmunk.
To shrink it. Right?
He can hold an entire warehouse full of things in his rectal sphincter.
Rectal. I nearly killed him.
Rectal. That's tonight's secret phrase rectal. For those of you keeping track on your punch cards. Rectal sphincter.
Why didn't Rob Liefeld ever draw him? And he wouldn't even need patches or pouches. He'd just have a giant pouchy ass just full of stuff.
It's just swollen with things he thought he might need on the trip.
So
it's like, no, Reed, I don't want the granola bar. It looks delicious.
So what do you think the definition?
But I know where it's been.
So what do you think the definition of this episode is? Like, why are we doing this on this episode?
I think the main purpose is the continuity issue. And we'll get into the meat of that because there's certainly one of the chief offenders hangs heavily in our minds. But also, Reed Richards brings up an interesting example. It's not continuity in the long term, but continuity in the short term. And I think usually when we think of continuity, we're thinking about decades.
Yeah, yeah.
We're thinking about when somebody comes along and just retrofits the hell out of things. And usually that is, I want to tell this story, but present continuity in history, everything that's come before, won't let it happen.
Right.
So the best approach is to simply ignore it.
That eventually has to catch up with you, right?
Oh, yeah, I think it does. But the thing is that fans tend to get forgiving because they'll buy into, for the same reason that, and the reason I point out the editorial mandate is I think a lot of these come from editorial mandate. Yeah, but, and they're like, no, kind of story.
Right, right.
We get this kind of story, and eventually the fans, and it's okay. There's still a few old people like me who bitch about it, but
curmudgeons.
You know, what are you going to do at that point?
Well,
but, you know, in the long-term continuity, that's where you get the big mandates, because suddenly somebody wants to change the direction a character goes or give them these powers that didn't exist or actually, and more often than not, it's leading toward doing something different that we can't do without changing drastically what the character has on board. But speaking, though, in the short term, and that's one of the interesting things that kind of I don't think was heavy in my mind when I when we were hashing out how we were going to break this up into five parts, was that sort of short-term continuity. Where did that come from?
Okay.
I've never really followed the Punisher, but I suspect this has happened here and there, where suddenly when you need an additional weapon, it's just there.
Oh, yeah. Well, they fixed that. Here's one for you. Here's a retcon that we could talk about. When was it? It was right when they relaunched the Marvel Knights line, where they had Kevin Smith doing the Daredevil story arc. Well, they relaunched the Punisher after he had died. And remember the big deal when the Punisher died? Well, they brought him back, but they brought him back as an angel that had a magic angel trench coat that when you reached inside of it, you could pull out any angel gun you wanted and shoot people with
indeed.
It. Yes.
I think the angel gun has now supplanted the time bullet.
I don't know. I mean, the time bullet has been used in such a way that it has taken down Marvel and DC. The angel trench coat really only lasted, 6 or 7 issues.
So there was only so much Angel Punisher gun production that could be handled by the fanboys?
At some point, you have to say, this is not working. Like, this is a really bad idea. Also, if you want to talk about short-term Punisher retcons, how's about the one where they turned him black? How's about that one?
I have missed out on so many Punisher retcons.
I don't remember the exact story.
I honestly didn't know there were Punisher retcons.
I need to go back. Oh. They have changed his origin so many times. I need to go back and look at that. I have a definition for you that I'm going to share with you later. The definition of Marvel time and the way it is defined by Marvel. The way that they define their time, the way that the time scales and works in their universe. But we'll do that later. Short term, you were talking about short term retcons, like, or short term changes, things that happen issue to issue.
Absolutely.
Okay. I got in a roll there and lost myself. I'm back now, though. I'm back. I'm trying to think of some of my favorite short-term changes. There aren't too many because I don't pay much attention to them. Batman has a bunch. You know, Batman lives in the world of short-term changes like that. And then the nice thing about that is if you have a bunch of – like if you've built your legacy on short-term changes, you get somebody like Grant Morrison gets a hold of your book and has a salubrious wealth of knowledge that he has gone back and culled from, and he can do anything now. Like, he is a god within his own world, not because he can do whatever he wants, but because you've given him the ammunition to do whatever he wants. That's amazing to me. As far as I didn't know we had one of those short-term and long-term vehicles, I think my favorite, and we talked a little bit about this last issue, at least the terminology that made it my favorite, but I think my favorite is Wanda Maximoff, the Scarlet Witch.
Oh, yes. Her strangely inexplicable mutant power.
Which is known as probability control.
Yeah, or the hex power that no one could quite define.
Right. So if you ever got yourself into a situation where you needed out of it, you could just have her give the Ronnie James Dio horns.
You could probability your way out.
Right. That never happened because she's here. Well, that's the whole reason that – isn't that the whole reason that weird House of M thing happened? Were you privy to any of that?
Just a bit, but I know what you mean, that where there was you wind up with just sort of retrofitting everything simultaneously.
Yeah, she hexed herself some kids, okay, that weren't real, that she used her hex powers because they can do anything. So
that's true.
Why not make some kids? And they had to go in and tell her that she doesn't have kids. Essentially, like, hey, you invented your children, and she lost her mind, and that's when everything went to House of M shit on everybody. So Wanda Maximoff, who can change things from panel to panel, issue to issue, and storyline to storyline, and continuity to continuity, is probably probably my favorite go-to for short term. She's my favorite short term. Where did we get one of these?
Absolutely, yeah. She is a handy tool for rapid change.
Right. You know who else is a handy tool for rapid change? You know who else is the Ron Popeil knife that can cut through a tomato in a can? What was that, the Ginsu knife? The Ginsu knife of the Marvel Universe is Loki.
Oh, yes. Let's say, for example, you've gone crazy as you're a writer for comics, and you've gone insane, and all of a sudden you decide that the entire animal kingdom is sentient, and you want to project your nutty, goofball new way of thinking onto your reading audience.
Right.
So you want to turn, let's just say Thor.
Sure.
into a frog.
Yeah.
So that he can experience firsthand frog's experience.
Well, Lacey is always quick to point out to me, whenever we talk about Thor, that Thor has the all-speak, which I never knew that, I guess.
Now that is all-speak, like speaking all languages?
Yeah, including animals.
Not to be confused with the all-spies.
The all-spies.
Which was an archaic weapon.
Hold on a second. I got to get an answer here. Are you looking, we can do this. We can do this right on the podcast. Hold on.
Are you looking up all speak or all spies?
I have Aldi's. I could use some discount cereal. Hold on.
We're actually going to have live coverage now.
You're getting live coverage. I'm going to get to the bottom of this all speak thing. Hold on. Cole, entertain them. Juggle something. Play me off.
That's right. So while that's going on, we are working slowly toward one of the larger issues here on this particular subject matter. the big furry wild hair, muscles on muscles, mutant healing factor.
All right, Lacey's here.
Angry Canadian elephant room, of course.
Can you explain very briefly what the Allspeak is? Can you explain what Thor's Allspeak is? You keep talking about Thor's Allspeak.
I want to know why when he speaks, he's always written using archaic English, when the idea is of the Allspeak is that if he speaks, everybody understands.
Okay. Thank you, honey. Now you can go. You can go. Thank you for guesting.
Formal archaic.
Okay. So that, apparently I didn't get the definition that I was hoping for. I just got a question that we can answer. But Thor has the Allspeak, which is his way of talking to everything, including when he's turned into a frog. So there's,
okay.
So there's that. And I guess he needs it to guide his hoary host of goats when they fly him through the air on his chariot.
Oh, yes, the goat chariot.
His goat chariot, I guess. So that helps for that, too. Mundane superpowers, yes, dear. He has, I don't know, like Loki in my estimation, he is an early abuser of this. He was one of the first ever, before they even needed retcons, they had Loki.
Yeah. I will point out, in all fairness, there is a mythological precedent for the goat chariot.
Well, sure.
But somehow he'd managed to live without that for most of his career.
Well, it's the idea of why Wonder Woman needs a fly, you know, an invisible jet, after they retconned her into the ability to fly. You know, why do you need an invisible jet if you can fly? Why do you need a goat chariot if you can, you know...
Oh, that's true. If you can just whip your hammer around and take to the air.
Yeah. Why do you even need a go chariot? What's the point
of that? I think it's for those long, you know, it's the difference between sprinting and marathoning.
So it's the ejectable fuel tanks on the side of the shuttle that once it gets out of Earth's atmosphere, it can drop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then he can make the rest of the journey on his own.
So what is your favorite?
It's like Ron Obvious. He'll be able to run straight to Mercury.
What's your favorite one of these?
You know, an interesting one. I can't say it was my favorite, and we are building, as I said, to the big offender here.
Right.
But one that really struck me as sort of a retcon, I didn't know we had one of these. From the outset, we have known Bruce Wayne / Batman has a loyal, faithful butler. who is later retconned to have been a field medic or something like that.
Yeah, wasn't he retconned at one point to be Joe Chill?
I think he was.
Okay.
Just on the off chance that it might drive his youthful boss into the field of crime fighting.
Right, right.
Which is a good career for a man of leisure.
Right, right. But what else?
Otherwise, he'd been like Klaus von Bülow. He would just sit around in a lounge chair all day.
He would watch Ice Station Zebra and wear empty tissue boxes as shoes, which is essentially what we got to see a glimpse of in the Dark Knight Rises. Right, that's what he had
that
become.
True.
He had become that. That
I
Howard
think
Hughes character.
It was implied, though not exactly expressed. That in the Dark Knight Returns, in the seminal, we did a whole issue on him, Frank Miller epic there.
Right.
That the aged Batman's cowl was actually made from the remains of Alfred.
Is that right?
That's the version I'm going with.
Did you just totally retcon Frank Miller's? He skinned Alfred and made a cloak and cowl out of him.
That's right, because it would strike even more fear. The criminals were no longer afraid of bats, but they were afraid of batshit crazy people with dead.
You know what I think happened?
Skin on their face.
You know what I think happened? I think Bruce got tired of hearing that damn French Foreign Legion ruby the size of my fist story. Tell it one more time, Alfred. Tell it
I dare you, old man.
I dare you. That's
tell
it.
Me about the pomegranate-sized gems.
Right. That's it. That's it.
I warned you. You ever seen Face Off? Anyway. What had happened was years ago, many, many years ago, Marvel and DC put out Marvel Universe and Who's Who, respectively, in reverse.
Sure.
And many years after that, they decided to revive both projects and do them in a new loose leaf format, which didn't, they weren't beholden to having issues that were full of crap.
By the way, I hated that.
Oh, I did too.
I hated that. But it meant that
instead of publishing an entire issue on L, where, most of the characters were so obscure, people were writing in saying, why do I need to know about them?
Right.
They were able to, mix it up a bit and make these just dreadful. Marvel could not have been more boring.
Right, right.
They did that three around, front, back, and side with the exact same pose for every single character.
I hated... Yeah, that was awful. The
And then DC hired the worst artists they could find for most of the entries.
Well, it was the interns, right? I mean, that's how they...
It must have been, or just some kids, or,
I remember hearing something somewhere, and I know that you had a story about this, about one of the artists that was drawing the aliens.
Oh, yes, in the original Marvel Universe.
Right, but I remember hearing a story a long time ago about those books where that was the first job you had.
Oh, yeah.
And especially for Marvel, I don't know about DC, but especially for Marvel, that was your job when you got to Marvel, is you started by doing this, and you were given these Z-list characters to draw.
Exactly.
Or write the bio for. And I think some of those guys went on to be pretty famous. I don't know if all of them did, but I know some of them did.
Oh, absolutely. But the problem was, you get to whatever issue of this was. You crack the cellophane off the thing, you start to arrange it in your notebook, and you get the fold-out thing on the Batcave.
Right.
And there's this very crudely drawn image, and I think it was by somebody who was pretty famous in comics at the time, but it was just very, very poorly drawn.
It was done
And
while,
here's
like,
Batman, huh? Yeah.
It was just done while he was, eating dinner or something.
I mean, I ditched all that crap a long time ago because it was just awful, but so I don't even have it to refer back to. But you had this god-awful image, and, here's the Batcave. You see a Batmobile up on a plateau in the background, and... off some escarpment is some more banks of computers, and maybe there's a bat boat off to the side or the and off to one side is this snaggletooth hunchback busily welding something together.
A snaggletooth hunchback.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, what is the snaggletooth hunchback doing in the Batcave? Apart from busily welding something together. It turns out that apparently locked away in the silent catacombs of the Batcave was a retcon snaggletooth hunchback who built a lot of Batman's equipment. For
what?
Him. Yes.
What? No.
I think it probably went away as a result of this Batcave entry because we never spoke of it again.
Hold on. Do you really think that there was like a snaggletooth hunchback?
I don't. They said there was.
No, but here's my thing. And I'm not saying do you. Let me royal you. It's the royal you.
Okay, yeah.
Do you really think that there's a snaggletooth hunchback? Or do you think somebody was assigned this project and they went... I'm just going to put a snaggletooth hunchback back here and make up a story about him, about what he does in the Batcave, and I just won't tell anybody. We'll see if we can get it through the vetting process.
The thing about it is that somewhere in that entry, it kind of explained who that was, just almost in passing.
Really? I am going to have to look this up.
I'm desperately searching for that entry as we speak.
While you're searching for that entry, and again, this is something that we might talk about later or not. There was a series of Marvel books based on the New Avengers, and I'm going to have to grab them here, so hold on one second.
But also, we'll point out another of the sort of retconned, I didn't know we had one of these. One of the best things that ever happened to superheroes since magic or the nuclear age, as we mentioned before, was Stan Lee's introduction of mutants.
Yes.
Because the mutant allowed you to have anything, everything. You wanted a character with a power, you know, like we talked about in our Sensing Comics story arc. If you wanted peepers, then you just say, oh, here's the guy with mutant eyeballs, and you're done.
And you're done. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
And that, for some reason, wasn't enough for somebody down the line. And somewhere in recent history, when I got curious and decided, okay, it's time for somebody to tell me why Beast looks like a kitty cat.
Right.
And then I find out, we've got one of these. Secondary mutations.
Right.
What the hell are you talking about? Secondary. Okay, these guys have been around for 50 years almost. And all of a sudden, we have secondary mutations. And somehow, Beast's secondary mutation is highly complementary of his artificial mutation. So how does that happen?
What was Beast's... So Beast's first mutation was that he... It was the agility, right?
I mean, yeah, he's like super agile, super... Probably stronger than average.
Right.
Super athleticism. And God bless you, Snaggletooth Hunchback.
I found the Snaggletooth Hunchback, buddy.
I actually found that same picture, but it was cropped on the thumbnail to the point I didn't realize I'd found the one I was looking for.
Anything for you. Anything for you. If I can find the Snaggletooth Hunchback for you, I will.
Yes, and there indeed you have what to me was like one of the biggest first... One of the first times I was like, I didn't know we had one of these.
Right.
Because you look across the Bat River.
The Bat River.
Where the Bat Boat resides.
Right.
And you see Batman, of course. And you see Alfred. And you see Robin. You even see Ace the Bat Hound, for God's sake.
Right.
You see the Bat Gyro. You see the Bat Da Vinci Glider.
Right.
I'll give you the Bat Da Vinci Glider. But meanwhile, across the lazy river, busily working, ignored by everyone else, is Snaggletooth Hunchback.
Here's my thing about Snaggletooth Hunchback, right? You've got this image, and we'll post the image. Cole has the image. We'll post the image as part of the flavor for this episode.
Are you kidding? This has replaced the original flavor.
It's not like the foreground is Alfred, Batman, Ace, Robin, and the bat computers and everything. And then somewhere in the wee background of the thing is Snaggletooth Hunchback working diligently on something. No. Snaggletooth Hunchback is the predominant image in this. Like Batman,
oh, yeah, he draws your eye more than the Tyrannosaurus.
Right. You've got all of the Batcave, you know, regulars, the luminaries in here. You've got Tyrannosaurus, Giant Penny, the original Red Hood costume, the giant chessboard, the giant Joker, like Cole was saying, Da Vinci Bat, Gyro Bat, Bat Boat, Batmobile, but
You've got old Bat Robin costumes and Bat costumes in the background.
Right. None of them draw your eye as predominantly as Snaggletooth Hunchback. I never knew there was a Snaggletooth Hunchback.
Well, I'm so glad I could bring that to your attention.
That is the biggest.
It looks like he's working on a combination of ductwork and some sort of grappling gun.
Right. I don't know. Do they know he's there?
He's using all Bruce's tools.
Is that Granny Goodness? I don't know what that is.
I know.
But they're definitely, we'll post it so everybody can see Snaggletooth Hunchback. And if anybody has any backstory on Snaggletooth Hunchback, feel free to let us know. We would love to hear it.
Yeah, we will certainly bring that up in a later issue.
Did you have anything to close with Bruce Wayne on, or is it the Snaggletooth Hunchback?
I think we should let Snaggletooth Hunchback go, because we got some more ground to cover.
All right,
on this.
All right.
This was one of those, I think, going in, we're both thinking, okay, there's not a lot to talk about this issue.
I really want to talk more about
Snaggletooth. As so often happens, there's a lot to talk about.
I really want to talk about Snaggletooth Hunchback forever.
It was super special, Snaggletooth Hunchback.
See, here's the thing. So around the time of the Great Skrull invasion that I speak about occasionally, there was a need to start retconning and describing why things had happened. Why the Skrulls were so hell-bent on invading Earth, aside from the fact that they were just little Skrulls that were pissed off all the time. You know, explain the Infinity Gauntlet, you know, because the Infinity Wars were coming up. Explain all of these little things. Secret Wars was another one. Explain Secret Wars. Explain all of these different things that had happened, which all in and of themselves had done a decent job of explaining themselves. But the continuity had changed so dramatically that you needed something. You needed something. So Bendis got a hold of this thing, and Illuminati happened. Illuminati is the backdoor. I didn't know we had one of these for the entire Marvel Universe forever. And what it was a secret cabal of the most powerful men.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Men, not women, but men of the Marvel Universe.
Now, the thing about it is, I have to point out that before the show, I'm asked, do I remember this by name? And I'm like, nothing. I got nothing on this. No sooner do you start saying this thing about the secret cabal, I'm like, I do know this.
So,
I do remember this.
So you've got Doctor Strange, Black Bolt, Xavier, Richards, Namor, and Iron Man. And they go in and explain the unseen parts of the reason that the Kree are so pissed at us is because we dropped Galactus on their planet. Which, that's a good reason. That's a good reason to be pissed. Why the Infinity Gauntlet is broken up in the way that it is. So all of these things get explained through the eyes of this secret organization that has existed forever. And we also find out that Doctor Strange is a secret philanderer in here.
Yeah, it's sort of the Marvel's Illuminati.
Yeah, I really liked the issue with the women of they're significant others, I should say, where you've got Medusa, Sue Storm, Night Nurse, Madame Mask, and Ilandra from the Shaiir.
Oh,
like as the actual secret controlling power of the men in the, you know what I mean?
And like, I think it's hilarious though also that Black Bolt is part of this Illuminati, this cabal. They must use a lot of notepads.
Right. They have a one of those Dragon Naturally Speak programs on a laptop somewhere that Tony Stark has whooped up. So that was probably that one. And I really, here's the thing. Much like I love the inventiveness of a good retcon, you know? I really like the inventiveness of a good retcon. I don't like the need to over-explain everything. Huh. Like, the Secret Wars, right, were awful. We're all in agreement that the Secret Wars were really bad.
The only thing worse than Secret Wars was Secret Wars 2.
Right. Right. But you don't need... But later, we find out, and this is probably the weirdest thing about this, and this is one of the big culprits, and I don't know whether this is the one you're going to talk about, or one that I want to talk about. I don't want to blow your big one. Wait a second. I'm not going to retcon that out. I'm leaving that right where it is.
Yeah.
I'm going to let that sit. I don't want to blow your big one. We find out that the Beyonder in this is actually a cosmic cube. It's the internal workings. It's the internal workings of a cosmic cube. That's what the Beyonder is. So
it doesn't help.
No, it doesn't help at all. So that was my probably one of my worst ones, was that the Beyonder is a cosmic hero. So what? Why don't you roll out your big guns? We're about two-thirds of the way through the show.
I think we're far enough in. We're going to have to pull out all the stops and unsheathe
yes.
the almighty bone claw.
Oh, see, I was going to go with another one, but your bone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, your bone claws are really bad. I want you to rant about. Here's the thing. I was editing the last episode, and you were angry. I don't often hear you actually like angry about anything. You were really mad about this topic. Like there were, I could tell there were some points in there that really got you upset. And bone claws.
I get like, you know, Ron Silver playing Harold Dershowitz in Reversal of Fortune. I get pissed off, and bone. Piss me off.
Bone claws really, really set you on fire. So I want you to go. I want you to go and just go with it. Just tell me all about bone claws. Why? Show me on the retconned James Howlett where the bone claws hurt you, Cole.
The problem, the biggest problem with bone claws is and people are thinking, well, what? They're kind of opaque, as I recall. I'm talking about the transparency when you try to pretend like this wasn't some ridiculous editorial mandate so we could do stories Wolverine loses his adamantium somewhere down the line without having to go into a great big descriptor or find some unique way for him to have the claw, the nature of the claws he's always had, somehow removed from his body. And God knows we can't have him simply not have claws.
Right.
That
right.
won't do. I mean, the claws themselves notwithstanding, I could go on for days about how the earliest Wolverine I saw, the claws to me always looked symmetrical.
Yes.
They looked like they were tubular in nature, that they tapered toward the end, right. and they were laterally symmetrical.
They looked like they were pointed. They weren't katana blades.
They were
pointed.
And over the years,
yes.
they had become everything from katana blades to Ginsu knives to fork tines. There was an issue of Marvel Team-Up where it looked like he had this giant fork sticking out of his hand.
And they ranged in length from a foot to like 4 foot. They were just, it was ridiculous. Yeah.
Is there anything in thickness from coat hanger wire to...
They really were. It was it was crazy.
Like axe blades. So, you know, that notwithstanding, let's just take the claws as red.
Okay.
Then come the bone claws, especially when the popular style became the katana blade.
The ninjas.
How does adamantium-covered bone claw turn into katana blade? I don't know. I'm still struggling with that one. But the problem was, I remember people gaga over Origin. Oh my God, finally, the origin of Wolverine. You know, this is the greatest story ever written. And I took one look at the thing, like, what the hell is going on here on the cover? That's his bone claws.
Yeah.
He always had bone claws. And I sort of looked at people and said, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
No. No.
Because there was a time in comics, I don't know if they still do this as much, but a lot of the story, a lot of exposition was done through simple caption boxes.
Right.
To me, that's the strongest way to present graphic fiction, is to impart things via a chorus, as it were.
Right.
And that chorus sung to the high heaven that Wolverine's claws didn't come out of his body.
Right.
They were produced, they were manufactured, and installed.
With his adamantium. As
yes,
part
they
of...
They put the adamantium on his skeleton, they replaced his radius and ulna with a comparable, with an analog that included what was repeatedly referred to as bionic housings in his forearms.
Not his... Here, riddle me this, right?
Not special, you know, no corollary anywhere else in the animal kingdom musculature. that could expand and retract like a chameleon's tongue to force them in or out of his arm, out of his hand.
Well, the other idea was this something that grew every time and then retracted back into him? That doesn't make any sense, right? Like, how does he... And secondly, if they come out of... And I know, we could do an entire episode on the horror story that is what they've done to Wolverine. Let's not...
Oh, yeah.
If they didn't... Okay, so initially they came out of his forearm, right? That's...
Yeah, and in fact, if you look at the original illustrations, it makes it appear as if they're sprung out of the upper back of his hand.
So, here's the thing. Unless you have... And this is stupid on my part. I'm overthinking it, and I know I am. Unless you hold your wrist completely straight when these bone claws de and retract, they can't go in and out of their little housing thing on the back of your hand, right? Like if you're if you've got your wrist bent when you try to send them out, yeah, they're going to go through your skin because you don't have your little housing chute right there, your little hangers on top of your glove.
You haven't lined up the component parts right.
Right. But what's not going to happen is every time you try to push them out there, they're not going to make your whole hand bloody like they did for the entirety of the 90s. Just every time in the 90s. And I think the worst one that I ever saw was, it was a Captain America annual where they had to fight. What did they have to fight? One of the robots, one of the adamantium robots, and Wolverine and Captain America had to fight him, and they had to get inside of the robot's housing. So Wolverine had his claws like right at the precipice of where the head meets the body, and Captain America's just beating the crap out of his hands to try to shove these claws into the thing, you know, to like pop the cork on the thing. It was awful. It's like, God, but yes, okay, bone claws don't exist. Bone claws don't
exist.
Exactly.
The bone claw doesn't exist because it doesn't work. It was a tremendous retcon. It's probably one of the most glaring.
Right.
And people are like, oh, I love Wolverine. He's the best. I always loved Wolverine. No, you didn't, because you never read Wolverine until Origin.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, you would be as incensed as I am about Origin. I have no problem with Wolverine being 120 or whatever, you know, that's 2000 to you and me. But what I have
the Aunt May of comic book characters. He probably hooked up with Aunt May just like Captain America did, all right? But he hooked up with Aunt May in the 1860s.
The problem I have is that up to Weapon X, those claws were put into him.
Right.
Even Weapon X, to my knowledge, is a retrofit because of Origin.
Well, did you ever read the amazing, and I think it was in Marvel Premiere, or Marvel, one of the Marvel anthology books that they used to put out? There was a beautiful, it was the origin of Wolverine, or at least the origin of Weapon X, drawn by Barry Windsor Smith.
Yes.
It was gorgeous. And it clearly showed in there, in the diagrams, that these friggin' claws were being installed in him. It was right there. And then you get in there and all of a sudden it's like bone claws. They also, and I don't know why, do you know why they regenerated or degenerated or de-evolved him? Do you remember when it was after they pulled the adamantium? And I think you're absolutely right. There was no reason to establish bone claws or establish that unless you were going to pull the adamantium off of him.
Exactly. And we can't have Wolverine without claws.
Right. That's ridiculous.
So we have to have bone claws, which allows you to break one of them so you can have a nice visual with five good and one broken claw. So you can get that whole, you want to get that whole Luke's tauntaun thing going on.
That's awesome. Do the claws exist in his person, or does he grow them a la Marrow? Was that the name of the character that grows bone?
Yes. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like, that was something I always wondered, too. Was that something that happened? Like, it's just that they've screwed up Wolverine so badly.
Oh, you know, it could be a secondary mutation.
Oh, here we go. See, can we talk briefly? Because this is my and you're going to have a lot more backstory on this than I am, but from what okay. I've read about it, my favorite one of these, the I didn't know we have one of those, is the Ultimate Nullifier. Reed Richards' Ultimate Nullifier that he can that has to be under lock and key all the time, second only to the negative zone. The negative zone is my favorite. I didn't know we had one of these, because not only is it a solution to any problem that you might have, but it's also a parallel universe that you can do whatever you want in.
Indeed,
and
yes.
Never have to worry about it necessarily affecting the prime material plane, if you will, unless you want it to as a writer. So if you want to have Annihilus and his bug army come out of the negative zone and kill or go into the negative zone and kill Johnny Storm for a while, yeah, you can do that. It's the negative zone. Nobody knows what happens in there.
That's right.
It's like the mind of a woman.
But he wasn't really dead. He was just negative zone dead.
Right. That's not positive zone dead. If you need a giant Gitmo for super criminals, put him negative in the zone. Negative zone. Why not? We got one of those. It's like that. It's exactly like you're saying. They pull it out whenever they need. We need one of these.
Exactly.
We have one of these. You know, we got a negative zone.
The less that's actually said about something, the more potential it has to be whatever you want it to be.
There has to be a law of depreciating knowledge with these things. Like, doesn't anybody ever say, like, as an editorial mandate even, doesn't anybody ever say with any of this stuff, and this is going to be one of my final things that I say tonight, and I was thinking about this, I'm like, the folly of this kind of situation is saying too much about it. The devil is in the details, right?
Oh, very well said.
So if you are going to create a negative zone, why would you have anybody but Reed Richards know about it? And why would you ever have Reed Richards say anything ever about it? About its
workings?
The only
thing I can think of there is the inquests after Blastar, Annihilus, or any number of other negative zone characters that made it through.
Right.
Is, even with the records being sealed, somebody's got to get in there and find out about this or hear whispers and get looking in the wrong places, then it turns into a Jack Reacher novel.
But what I'm saying is, you know, who is going to try to figure it out? Hank Pym? Like, you're, when you're the smartest guy in the room, and if you're Reed Richards, you're the smartest guy in the room at all times. All you have to do is be like, I don't know, and make something up. You know?
Yeah.
And then later put a note in, like, you know, like the Marvel asterisk, and then at the bottom of the page, in a thought bubble, I'm totally making this up. I would never tell them how the negative zone actually works. I will go to my grave never telling
exactly
a soul how this works. You know, it's like Oppenheimer. I don't want anyone to ever have this information ever.
We went into the negative zone 14 times. I'll give you that.
Right.
But the last time we went in, we had it on good authority from Blastar himself that from now on it's, poisonous. Yeah, it's poisonous. If you go in the negative zone, you die.
It would be like the Jack Nicholson speech at the end of A Few Good Men. You know, I stand on a wall, that whole thing. Like, if they ever called him to the stand under threat of perjury, like, where he had to, you can't handle the truth. So that's mine, is my final thought, because we are 6 minutes away, or however many minutes away, by the time we actually end, from being done with this episode. And there's so much more to talk about besides Snaggletooth, Hunchback, the Negative Zone, Bone Claws.
And actually, I determined during the course of this, because the ever-ticking brain is constantly chewing away on all of this data, the ultimate, I didn't know we had one of those.
Which is what?
That is the universal one-size-fits-all, somehow power-nullifying, protective handcuff thing.
Oh, that they would use at the raft or wherever?
Or anywhere.
Right.
You would see, like, you know, Daredevil, Spider-Man, and Johnny Human Torch spent about a whole issue beating some guy to a pulp to get him to stop blowing things up with his mind.
Yeah.
And at the end of the issue, two beat cops walking him, or, you know, they're crab walking him, or they're frog marching him out of there with some big, you know, a couple of big steel plates around his arms.
Well, they always, and they, whenever I remember seeing them, they're always weirdly conical. You know,
yes.
Blunted conical with like a weird like bar in between them.
Precisely. And it seems like no matter what the source of your power, if you pee fire or you breathe ice or you will reality to bend with your mind, you put on the cone cuffs.
And you're done.
You put on the tandem rocket there, and all of a sudden, everything's fine.
Who would invent a juggernaut helmet? Who would invent... I understand that Magneto made a Magneto helmet, which, by the way, is so far beyond me how he invented a helmet that would stop Professor X's power. I don't even want to wrap What's that?
No, because you would have to have a tremendous working knowledge of the dynamic of psychokinesis.
Right. But who would
And then
do it for
you
juggernaut?
Would have to invent... I mean, why doesn't he just... I mean, granted, he can do kind of anti-grav with his power, but if you could invent almost anything, there'd be no need to be an evil mutant. You'd be there.
Right.
You should be taking the Lex Luthor route, and it's like inventing crap.
But, you know, who would do it? Who would do it for Juggernaut, of all people?
Oh, I know. I know who.
Who?
Loki.
Loki. And we've come full circle, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. There you go. There you go.
Loki would invent the Juggernaut helmet.
So that...
For no other reason than it was something to do.
That part and parcel is the episode that we had in mind, I think.
So the next time you find yourself saying, I didn't know we had one of these, Loki...
Loki's around somewhere, and Juggernaut has a helmet. What is our...
had a combination corkscrew and bottle opener in your junk drawer. It was put there by Loki.
It was, and Reed Richards ain't saying a word about it. So what's next episode?
In our next episode of Continuity is Not Absolute, touch upon the magical, the bizarre, the strange world of when a character, by editorial mandate, piss-poor writing, no idea what we're doing, or just complete non-characterization, Steve once put it, does, says, or otherwise is involved in something that is so far out of left field, it's in right field. It has circled, it has circumnavigated the globe and wound up on the opposite side of the field, just shy of a full circle journey.
I'm gonna tell you right now, I'm going to lean very heavily on DC's annuals and Alpha Flight for this coming...
I think so. This is called, what was it, Out of Character?
Out of Touch.
Out of the Blue, Out of blue, Whack.
Out of the Blue, Out of the Whack, yes.
So, the big three there.
The big three. So, do you have any final comments, any final statements on where do we get one of those? When did we get
Harold
one of those?
Harold Allnut. That is my final statement.
What's your final statement?
Harold Allnut. A-L-L-N-U-T. Harold Allnut. I will leave that to our faithful listeners to go to Wikipedia, look up Harold Allnut, and all things will seem Loki-esque.
There you go. All right. So get out there, buy, collect, and enjoy comic books.
Especially comics with Loki.
And if I implore any of you that Alcon is going to come up faster than you know it.
Oh,
it's
good Lord, yes.
4 days of fantastic fun this year. I have a special prize in my man bag for the first person that comes up to me dressed as the Snaggletooth Hunchback. So if you want to cosplay as the Snaggletooth Hunchback, I have a special prize for you. On that note, I will sign off. Cole, would you say goodnight to the lovely listeners out there?
Good night, everybody.
Good night to each and every one of you. And ask yourself tonight, why does Juggernaut, who invented a helmet for Juggernaut? Good night, everybody.